Blog Talk Radio. A very big change. We used to come in to you at night, but we figured Thursday's a better day. It gives me more time to read the paper. I'm telling you, man, it's ridiculous because I got kids, so I don't have time to do anything. Either got playing hockey that night or taking them to a ball game or doing something for school or whatever, so the daytime seems to work out a little bit better. But again, the program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. Phone number, that's right, the phone number. Yes, use the phone number. Take the phone number down right now and give me a call when you have a chance. Phone number 773-897-6423. Again, that's 773-897-6423. Got a plethora of topics to cover today, and then we might just do some freeform radio as well. But some of the things I've been reading about, I'm not sure if you've heard about that library in Silver Spring, right? Reading is fundamental. Roof! But a $70 million library in Silver Springs, we'll get to that in a moment. Larry Hogan, who's he? He's the governor. I'm the gov. And Larry Hogan is telling you to get used to it. Also going to discuss Metro, Washington Metro. They tried to play games with Montgomery County, but they failed. I don't want to say epic fail. Isn't it funny all the kids out there, they use the word epic. Epic fail. Epic, Dad. It was epic. And then waxing poetic. This was a conversation I heard in my locker room last night of the hockey team, the disciples I was playing with. And people were talking about a city's culture. They were talking about New York City and gentrification and its effects. I think that's a very interesting topic, and I think it's based on age lines as well. We'll see. And also the great debate, the Donald, front and center tonight. Can you believe it? Can you believe that this guy is the leading candidate? Because you know what? Right now is the silly season. They talk about election time being the silly season. And politically, what has he got to lose? He could say whatever he wants. Even if he doesn't get elected president, irreverence really does sell. He doesn't have an answer for anything, but he can tell you what the problems are. But maybe he's got an important role by just telling you what the problems are, because if you don't face them and you don't try to, say, Donald, what are you going to do about it? Well, what if he turns to you tonight and says, well, what are you going to do about it, Jeb Bush? What are you going to do about it, Ted Cruz? What are you going to do? I don't have an answer. What are you going to do? Maybe he'll flush out some strategies from some of these guys, and we'll see. It might be a better situation. But then again, it could just be entertainment. I love it. Anyway, I want to talk about this library in Silver Spring. Overall, I was reading over the weekend. They just opened it up in Silver Spring. It's a place, full disclosure here, it's a place that I have not been to much. I've been to Silver Spring, but it's just not close for me. It's got to go across 200 or 495, get over there. I don't really have a reason to be there, but I know there's a lot of business down there. It's a tall city. I went to the Washington Monument, went all the way up top, and I got to see Silver Spring and Bethesda. It was pretty interesting because out of nowhere, out of flat land, rises a city. But so we know that Silver Spring has Discovery Channel. They're going to have the Transit Center. They got a bunch of other industry, and corporations there. So it's a city. And the people who live there are part of a city, and they're trying to be a city. But they took a corner in Silver Spring, and Montgomery County decided to build a library there. Good idea, bad idea? Not bad idea. I went to the one in Rockville the other day, the library in Rockville. They built it into the city. It's difficult, though, because of, you got to pay for parking. So that sort of takes away part of the library feel. But also, it's part of the city. It's a gathering place. This is what they want to do. They want to make stuff a gathering place. I get it. Because there's no more borders, there's no Barnes & Noble's not there. They want people to come together and be a community center and a gathering place. But what can you really do at this kind of community center? I'm a library junkie, so, every time I've mentioned this on the program before, every time I go to the library, I always pull out a book. Whether I read it or not is a different story, again, because I don't have time. All right. I make time for it. What happens is I get ready, I get comfortable, start reading my book, 15, 20 minutes. I'm out. I'm out. You know, I can't read for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I would love to. And because there's stuff that I just want to get educated on or get the knowledge about, but or just even read for fun. But sometimes you put a book in front of me, I'm good for 20, 30 minutes. There are a couple page turners that if you catch the right night, I'll be okay. But you know, it's like, let's read before we go to bed. Getting to bed at 9, 9:30. See ya. Bye bye. But anyway, the library is a gathering place. The library is a place for the internet. Right? The internet. The great internet. But it's also a place for meeting rooms. And, you know, everything always has descriptions. You ever listen to come down to the county fair? We'll have face painting. We'll have performance art and more. Everything's always and more. What more do you have after that? I mean, you got a bunch of nothing, and now you got more? More of nothing is nothing. You got to have something if you want to get with me. Library down there. You know, they want it to be a focal point for the city of Silver Spring. I get it. Makes sense. $70 million? $70 million? They say $35 million of which went to the library. You know, I got a couple friends in real estate and a couple friends who know how to build things. Maybe they should tell me, but $35 million for a library, $70 million overall for the project? You know, people go, oh, it's the most beautiful library in the world. The Washington Post just wrote an article about it, you know, the Montgomery section, Montgomery County section, saying a ho-hum library. You know, again, it's supposed to be a gathering place, but would Borders or Barnes & Noble ever build a $35 million store? $35 million or $75 million or $70 million? I mean, the numbers, that's what's the great thing about this stuff. You never understand what the numbers are because no one's ever going to be honest with you with the numbers. But, you know, the library system is very important. It has to be architectural firms are involved in ceiling to glass, you know, ceiling to floor glass windows, you know, cascading escalators, a coffee shop. You know, the coffee shop's a good idea. Try to bring some revenue back into it. But is a library a revenue-generating situation? No, it's not. And before you paint me with the brown shirt saying I'm anti-education or so, I told you I am for the libraries. I am for library systems. I am in the Quince Orchard Library constantly with my kids. We go in there. My kids know how to use a library. They know how to use the computers. They know how to find the books. They go in there and they read. We all read. We enjoy it. Definitely enjoy it. My kids more so. I have such a problem with my kids at times. It's like, will you put the book down? I mean, isn't that terrible? It's like, no, you can't read at the dinner table. No, you can't read at the breakfast table. Will you put the book down? It's time to go to bed. Everyone should have such problems, right? But I wish it was the other way. Will you get off the street hockey court? Will you get off the basketball court? But we're working towards that for sure. But still, $35 million. The county doesn't have a pot to piss in right now. You know, they just went back and tried to take out $50 million more out of the budget, you know, recycling everything and seeing what other cuts they can make. And I appreciate the austerity. I really do. But, you know, this is the thing about politicians. This is something that I said last week, and I continue to say it again after you read these kinds of stories. If there is money in a budget, nobody will ever put it into the savings account. No one will ever put it into the rainy day account. Because why? You know, I need to show public progress. I need to show what I've done. Taxes alone will get you elected and get you unelected. But no one ever saves that money so we don't have the tax increase because it's not sexy. I didn't give you anything. I didn't buy you anything. I didn't build you anything. Everybody wants a monument to themselves somehow, some way. A legacy. You know? That's what's happened now, is that politics has become legacy instead of what are you doing for the people. Here's my legacy. When I leave this office, you will have this. I mean, what's Obama doing, right? Everything on his agenda. We're going to go to Cuba. We're going to have Iran, you know, nuclear sanctions lifted. We're going to have a non-proliferation agreement. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. It's all because of legacy. Now he's into legacy building. He's got 2 years left. Do your job, man, worrying about legacy. I guess that's doing his job, right? But is it the right path? or do you need something that people can wax poetic about years later in history books? But here, a politician, you give a politician a dime, he'll spend 20 cents. It's the truth. I mean, that's what's amazing to me about what's going on in Montgomery County now, that they're actually looking to cut the budget again instead of spending more money. They know. Maybe they want to be reelected again and realize that this particular time, taxes are probably the key issue. Anytime you run a county or a city, what you have to have are the basic services. You got to have police, fire, trash collection, you know, and those are the keys. That's what people believe their taxes go to. Keeping them safe and keeping it clean. That's what people believe their taxes go to. You know, so when you build a $35 million library and $70 million building, $70 million building, I mean, that's just insane to me. It's insane. I don't care what it's for. You know, Montgomery County schools can't rub two nickels together either. They're just going to get killed with $400 million with the budget cuts from Larry Hogan coming down the pipe. You know, and they're talking about 400 teachers being let go or 400 employees and this and that. Fairfax County, I mean, this is a different county, but you saw reading the paper today, Fairfax County doesn't have enough money for their school system, so they're thinking about cutting sports. That's crazy. I mean, they could do it like Catholic schools where you got to pay for the sports. I know that when I lived in New Rochelle, there was a school called Iona Prep. And, you know, they weren't subsidized, so you paid to play. But you paid to play a varsity. You could still play your $400 to be on the hockey team. But it doesn't mean that you're guaranteed a spot on the first line or even seeing the ice. So that was a difficult – that would be difficult to deal with. But anyway, I mean, it just goes to show. And that's the point of what I'm saying right here. It's an important situation because it's going to be a gathering place. It's going to be a nice showpiece for the city. But at the cost, is it too much? And would a Borders or a Barnes & Noble built a $70 million library or $35 million library or whatever it costs, would they have done it? I don't think so. I mean, we're talking about casinos right now, right? That's the kind of cost that goes into the Caesar's Palace. Heard a funny thing today about Trump. They said, so Mr. Trump, you know, it was on Howard Stern's show. Somebody sent me a clip. I had to listen. I don't listen to Howard Stern. Ever since he went off terrestrial radio, I haven't listened to him at all. You know, Sirius FM, I don't even know. I don't even get it. I don't drive enough to get Sirius FM. So I don't listen to Howard Stern. When I was back in New York years and years and years ago, he was on the air. I used to listen to him at times. You know, best part about Howard Stern is when it's not all the girl stuff and all of that kind of stuff. It's when he does, when he reads the news, Robin Quivers reads the news and he comments on it. Because he had some astute observations at times. But anyway, I digress, which is pretty much the key to this program. That's how I fill an hour. But anyway, I get back to the point here is saying that someone was doing an imitation of Trump. I'm like, Mr. Trump, what happens if you become president? He goes, I'd love to be president. He goes, you move into the White House. He goes, the White House, tear it down. It's a dump. I'd build a 7-story apartment building. It would look like my casinos. We'd have marble floors. And it's exactly, $35 million, right? $70 million. It pains me. It just pains me to read stuff like that. And what pains me also is that nobody's saying anything about it. You know, I guess it's budgeted a while ago, so that's great. But nobody's saying anything about it. You know, I'm curious to know what's going on. There's a North Potomac, the North Potomac Recreation Center that's being built as well, because they took money out of that fund to pay for the transit center to hand that off to the Washington Transit Authority. So it looks like work has been stopped there. You know, they're still working on some things, but full construction hasn't been completed yet. Got to get money for that. So that, you know, you can't let, once you start something, you got to finish it. That's a sign of a bad county. If you don't finish the stuff that you started, if the ground hasn't been broken yet, don't worry about it. But if the ground's been broken and stakes are in the ground and you got half a building up, you better finish it. Otherwise, you're starting to get into, you know, areas of being a derelict area, you know. That's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. The program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. We're meandering today. We're going through an hour trying to figure out what to talk about. That's why you come in. Phone number is 773-897-6423. Again, that's 773-897-6423. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about in Montgomery County? What do you want to talk about beyond Montgomery County? Because this is the show that talks about the issues that emanate from the immediate area, from D.C., from Baltimore, from the world. Last night, the show The Wire was mentioned, talking about the cops and everything that's going on The Wire. You know, I caught the last couple seasons of The Wire. I didn't catch the beginning, so I was a little out of the loop on that conversation. But talking about Baltimore, what's different? Baltimore going through its two highest murder rates in the last 2 months ever. I mean, it's through the roof. It's through the roof. People just killing people. NG, man. It's no good. It's no good. I mean, and it's gun violence as well, too. Handgun violence. You might disagree with me on this, but I really do think the handguns make a difference. Everyone's like, the dumbest bumper sticker I think I've ever seen is like, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but let me tell you, I haven't killed any man with my hands, with my bare hands. You know, I'm not strong enough, I'm not tough enough, and as a matter of fact, if I get into that fight, I start to think about it. Maybe I'm the one who get mutilated here, you know? Maybe I'm the one who get punched in the face, get my teeth kicked in. Maybe I should run away from this fight. Got a gun in your hand. How many times have you done things in such anger where you're not even thinking? You're like, oh, my God, I regret that. The minute after it's done, imagine you got a gun in your hand. You know, that it is escalation because, oh, yeah, you're going to come at me? Well, I'm going to shoot you. People aren't afraid to use the gun. They might be afraid of the repercussions afterwards, but they're not afraid to use it. And in that moment of unclarity, in that moment of white heat, you know, you got something in your hand, whether it's a rock, a gun, or a slingshot, you're probably going to use it. It all depends which one is the one. You know, you got a board in your hand, the guy's beating you up, you're going to use it. You're not running away. You know, so the gun violence is out of control. It's absolutely out of control. You know, Obama, you talk about legacy. Let me tell you what bothers me about Obama. Oh, do you have an hour? No, but seriously, this is, and I think this is a real issue. South Side of Chicago, this guy's a community organizer, right? That's where he came from, Chicago. Lives on the South Side of Chicago, is a Chicago White Sox fan. I only know two people who are White Sox fans. But anyway, you know, this is his big deal. He's the president. I'm going to make legacy. You want legacy? Save people. You know how you save people? Go into the South Side of Chicago and make your influence felt. Make a federal presence felt. 500 murders in a particular housing project near an area, you know, in an area near a housing project there. 500 murders, if not more. How about you save lives, right? Black lives matter. All lives matter. How about you go in there and save some lives? Be the president. Use your influence. You know, Obama goes around. He will pontificate on anything and everything that's brought to him, whether it's NCAA or Michael Brown situation out in Missouri. You know, anything and everything. You know, I got in a conversation with somebody that I used to work in my office, talking about Obama coming to Harlem. He's like, you know, Obama has never come to Harlem. You know, a black president. It's, I mean, talk about inspirational. Talk about saying, hey, man, we did it. Seeing, you know, kids striving to be the president of the United States instead of the guy on the corner. Right? I mean, I would be impressed if Obama came to my school. Everybody making fun of George Bush on September 11th, reading to kids in a school. But those kids, I mean, outside of that day, they're like, damn, the president came. And knowing what Obama is and what he symbolized at the particular time, that you can overcome, that you can beat the odds, that you can be the biggest opportunist of all time and see that window closing and jump through it, smash it down. You know, has he been to Harlem? To talk to school kids? No. You know, but the guy was like, no, he's been to Harlem. He's been to Harlem many times. All for fundraising, man. All for fundraising. Community organizer. When was the last time you've been back in Chicago? 8 years. When was the last time you've been back in Chicago? 6 years, whatever. Seems sort of hypocritical to me, unless Rahm Emanuel's like, Obama, I don't need you here. But it doesn't matter. You Trump a mayor of Chicago, you are the president. You know, your influence can be felt worldwide and nationally and in a microcosm of a neighborhood in Chicago. Go there. Save lives there. Make that a priority. Because pretty soon, you're not going to be president anymore, and your name's not going to have that much cachet when they realize what a nerd you are. I mean, Obama plays basketball in sweatpants. That tells you everything. No cool guy plays basketball in sweatpants. Inside a gym, mind you. Maybe if you're outside, and it's, you know, 32 degrees, and you're balling it on 110th Street or something. But no, you don't wear sweatpants playing ball inside. Ruins your crossover. You can't ruins your crossover and through the legs move. You can't do it. You can't do it. Well, my man Barry, you know, everyone's like, respect the office. I do respect the office. But I do respect, I would respect it more if the guy used his influence in different matters, in matters that people can touch, people that people can be part of. Hey, the black president came to my school. You know, you go on a corner in some of these neighborhoods, who do you respect? Oh, I respect the man who's got Benjamins, man. You know, guys who got the dollar bills, yo. The rappers. I respect the guy on the corner pushing whatever. Synthetic drugs, synthetic marijuana, crack, heroin, anything. Because he makes the papes. Well, you know what? You want to respect something? Have the president come down there and show him what you can do. You can be a senator. You can be a president. You know, if you're going to cloak yourself in race, then be part of the race and go out there and do and uplift. You might think this is treacherous ground, but I don't think so. I really don't think so. There's nothing racist in what I'm saying. What I'm saying is go out there and help your people, man. Keep them safe, if nothing else. Keep them safe. And I'm talking about your neighborhood. Your neighborhood. If a president came from North Potomac, I would expect the president to come back to North Potomac every once in a while. If the president came from New Rochelle, I would expect the president to go back to New Rochelle every once in a while. See what's going on. I mean, that's the only thing. It's like, I know it's made up, but like Frank Underwood, right, from House of Cards, goes to Gaffney, South Carolina, goes back there, just goes back, right, because that's where he's from. And that's the way to do it. And if there's a problem bubbling, surfacing in your area, then you got to go out there and face it head on. You got to face it head on. Be the man. I couldn't give a damn about your NCAA picks. You know, Obama's out there, oh, you're cool, man. Oh, you're cool. You fill out a bracket. You know, why does everybody want the common man sometimes? Don't you want somebody who you think is a little bit smarter than you running the country? Not the guy, you know, I mean, Joe Sixpack or whatever. Do you really want that? I don't. I want a guy who has a little bit of airs to him. I'm not talking about being obnoxious and stepping on, you know, the little people, so to speak, which I would classify myself as. But I also don't need a guy, you know, to give me a pound and tell me to pick Murray State over Vanderbilt in the first round. I don't need a guy to opine on every issue, every popular issue. Separate yourself a little bit. I don't need a president to be tweeting. Who's got time for that, man? Really, who's got time for that? And anything that comes out of that Obama White House, you know, it's been looked over 17 times. It's not real. It's not a real comment. You know, it's been brushed up by PR people, or not Susan Rice, but Valerie Jarrett. Oh, Obama, Barack, don't do that. Don't put that out. I don't know. I'm disappointed in the leadership aspects of the president. He promised a lot, promised to lead. You know, I got himself caught in gridlock. That's not his fault, so to speak. I mean, he's got a lot of enemies, just sworn enemies from birth, so to speak. You know, but there are things I think he could do better to lead the country. and to lead is taking action. You talk about all you want, but Chicago is just waiting there for you. And so the point being, Baltimore, right? Oh, I forgot the congressman who was there during the riots. Elijah Cummings, I believe it is. That guy, I mean, yeah, CNN cameras were there. Everybody's cameras were there. But that's his neighborhood. In his neighborhood, trying to quell any disturbance, any violence, any rioting, because he knows it's not worth it. You know, he was there being part of something, telling people to go home when the curfew was in. He didn't like what he saw. He doesn't like people dying in police custody either. But to me, that was leadership. He went home. He went home. I don't expect President Obama to be at the riot, you know, in Baltimore. But this guy, a congressman, representing his people, he went home. But Baltimore, you know, Baltimore's a tough city. The perception of Baltimore outside of Baltimore is that it's tough. You know, there are a couple. There's Philadelphia. There's Baltimore. You know, it's that row housing effect. That's what it seems like. Seriously. I mean, Baltimore, the stories I have in Baltimore, especially when I was working in rap music, you know, I was going to a bunch of different neighborhoods and guys getting police catching guys on the front of my car, you know, and handcuffing them there. It's like, ah! Get out of here. What am I doing? Ah. Yeah, but I mean, Baltimore's got some crazy stuff, and now people just killing each other. When does it end? When does it stop? You know, you don't want police presence? Well, this is what you get. I don't know where the... See, I'm like Trump right now. I don't have the answer for this. I can't go back and forth on this. It's like, but there's got to be presence. People need order. Huh? I sound like Hydra now, right? From the Avengers. But it's true. People need to be trained. They need to find order before they can find themselves. Before they can find the good in themselves, there's got to be, I hate to say it, trained a little bit. I mean, case in point is New York City, and I will go back to this forever and forever and forever. Rudy Giuliani painted boxes on the subway that said, please step aside where the doors would open. Because people would try to get on while people were getting off. It was a fight every morning. Every morning, it was a fight. 1991, 1990, when I first started working. Now, people, you know, the one guy who tries to get on the subway train before everybody gets off, everyone's like, hey, jerk. You know, they look at him differently. He's not getting ahead. He's the jerk. He's the problem. He's not the pushy New Yorker. You're the problem. There's no badge of honor for getting on the subway train first. Let the people off. Let the people off. So there was a summit in Washington. All the police chiefs came here to talk about the summer of violence. Violent crime on the uptick pretty much everywhere. It's on the uptick in D.C., it's on the uptick in Baltimore, as I just told you, with record-setting crime. So everybody got together to talk about what to do about it. I haven't heard any solutions. Nobody knows. What they're going to say is education. You've got to put more dollars in there. You've got to give education, which is true. You've got to open up rec centers to have people play basketball or have some place to go. Maybe true also. There's a lot of questions out there without answers. It's difficult. I'm a little too tired to give you my answers today. I'm tired, man. Playing hockey, working out, just doing my plain old work. This is lunch hour now, so I don't want you to pretend like, I don't want you to know, think that I'm not working. I'm working my 9 to 5, but I'm on lunch hour because I want to talk to the people. I want to hear what the people have to say. What is your opinion about any of this stuff? You know, I mean, I know that you're out there listening. A lot of you listening on archive, so it's tough. Call me anyway. My phone number, if you ever want to get in touch with me, is 773-897-6423. Again, it's 773-897-6423. My wife and I were in the car the other day. We're talking about things. We're talking about how come certain cultural things don't travel down a turnpike. My wife is very mad. She doesn't understand why you can't get breakfast, real breakfast, in Gaithersburg, Maryland, North Potomac area? Why can't you get a real breakfast around here? Why do you have to go to McDonald's? Why do the old men have to congregate at McDonald's? Why do we have to go to Panera Bread? Why can't someone open a diner? You know, everyone makes fun of Jersey and New York for the diners and stuff like that. The diner is probably the best food establishment you could ever create because it's got everything you want. Some of these places, I don't understand people who order veal piccata at a diner. I'll never get that. Let me get prime rib at a diner. What are you, an idiot? First of all, probably about three of those a week gets plated and served, so don't buy that. But, I mean, if you want a hamburger, a turkey sandwich, eggs, omelets, pancakes, waffles, a diner, man, a diner, it would work. You know, everybody makes such a big deal. Everything down here is what I don't get. Simplification in life is gone. It's out the window. I mean, we talked about this last week as well. With that pizza place, Inferno Pizza, coming in. Where, how come you can't just serve slices? You got to have gourmet pizza. Got to have a certificate from Naples to serve Napolitano pizza. Well, take a walk, man. Why does everybody feel compelled to complicate things? Everybody wants to be the common man, right? I mean, think about this. Let's tie our arguments back in together. Everybody loves Obama because he's like, oh, you know, fist bumps and I'm cool and I'm common. I'm with you, man. But nobody wants to be common anymore. And it's like, we got to have fufu pizza. We got to have, you know, special organic Whole Foods spinach on our pizza. We got to have goat cheese pizza. You know, come on. Yeah, I do get mad at this kind of stuff. We got to have beer, right? We got to have 19,000 beers. Everybody's got a beer company. Budweiser's no good. It quenches your thirst. Doesn't fill you up too much, but it's no good. We got to find something that gives you an immediate headache. We have to brew an immediate headache beer. Come on, get on it. Get my people on it. And I know some of you disagree with what I'm saying about that as well, but it's just a microcosm for everybody taking something that could be simple and complicating. There's a thing in New York, and all the people who listen to me in New York understand this. Is there a better breakfast sandwich than a bacon, egg, and cheese on a Kaiser roll? I agree. No, there isn't. Exactly. Exactly what I'm saying. No, there isn't. But down here, do they have a bacon? Can you get a bacon, egg, and cheese on a roll anywhere down here? Uh-uh. I mean, they push them out of carts on city corners in New Rochelle or in New York City. Here, you can't do it. You got to get some Panera egg white omelet. Or a McDonald's Egg McMuffin. I'm not down on the Egg McMuffin, but I don't want the Egg McMuffin. Everything gets served on a biscuit or a croissant or something like that. Ugh. Come on, man. Come on. My wife is right. You know, you open up a little thing that goes from 7 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon, serving breakfast and maybe a sandwich. You make some money. People will come. Especially on the weekend. This is about knowing your audience. And what bothers me around here is everybody's trying to put in fufu and shishi when everybody out here just has kids. We live in the suburbs. The suburbs. If I want to eat fufu and shishi, I'm going to go an extra 7 to 8 minutes to Rockville. An extra 22 minutes to Bethesda, because that's where the young people should be if any young people are living in Montgomery County, which I do not get. Around here, I get it a little bit more because the jobs are mixed up. And maybe it's a little bit more affordable than living in D.C. Because, you know, you can work in Bethesda in a real company or a Silver Spring or something like that, as we mentioned before. And, you know, you live there. Okay, I get it. Young people should not be living in North Potomac or Gaithersburg. Just shouldn't be. You're missing out. You got to drive your car to places. You're missing out. Live downtown. Why live here? You know, they talk about young people moving away. No kidding. No kidding. Because it's so the point being is you're trying to, and who are the people? I mean, whose kids? Are you leaving kids with grandma all the time that you're going out to get, you know, these fancy restaurants? I'm not saying they can't have one or two, and I'm not trying to be super simple about things, but what's happening is there's no balance. The balance isn't here anymore. What happens is that everybody opens up the foo-foo shishi, and nobody opens up the simple. So the simple disappears. It's not around anymore. You can't find it. And then the foo-foo shishi will go out in 3 weeks because nobody's looking for the foo-foo shishi because they all want the simple. Restaurateurs, get with it. Just some American food. I know I harped on this a lot, but I mean it. I mean it. Program's called Outside Looking In. My name is Bruce Negrin. I'm here. I don't know when I'm here. I'm here on Thursdays. I think we're going to keep with the Thursdays. I like Thursday. When I did my show on Nourish Show, it was Thursdays at 8. But I think we'll keep Thursdays in the daytime. We're getting some good listeners. Wish we'd get some callers, but we'll work on that as well. If you need to get in touch with me, I'm on Facebook. Of course you're on Facebook. It's called Outside Looking In. You can sign up on Blog Talk Radio as well to get notifications of when we go on the air. Pop-up radio, man. If Target can have pop-up stores, I could just pop up anywhere. Poof. There you go. I think the next show I'm going to do is just make fun of Washington sports. You can tell football season's coming because I already know three deep on the depth chart for all the Redskins. I cannot believe. You know, people talk about New York, okay? The pressure of playing in New York. I think if you're doing sports, there's not that much pressure in New York. Yeah, there are a lot more eyes on you. But can you imagine being the quarterback of the Redskins, right? The only football team in the area. We're not counting Baltimore right now. But everything you do, I mean, the Redskins, the third string people on the Redskins are known. Because, well, if this guy goes down, he can move him here and we can fill in here. The pressure is playing in these smaller markets. You know, New York, a big market. Yeah, but you got the Jets and the Giants. And half a football season is taken up if the Yankees are winning or my M-E-T-S, Mets, Mets, Mets. That's right. Meet the Mets. Greet the Mets. Step right up and meet the Mets. Bring your kiddies. Bring your wife. You're guaranteed to have the time of your life because the Mets are really knocking that ball, hitting those home runs over the wall. East side, west side, everybody's coming down to see the Mets. Mets of New York. That's right, the Mets. What's up with your Nationals? What's up? What's up? What's up with your Bryce Harper Wolfman? Let me tell you about Bryce Harper. I want to talk to Bryce Harper for a second because I'll give him some advice. Stop arguing balls and strikes. You're too good to be doing that. First of all, you're never going to get the strike. You're never going to get the call if you keep arguing everything. Second, stay in the game, man. Stop getting thrown out. You can't get thrown out in the 11th inning. Or do it. What do I care? I'm a Met fan. You're a schmuck. Do it. Do it. Do it. And what's up with Jason Worth, man? Jason Worth, Chia Pet. 97 degrees outside. Shave that nasty beard with that soup in it. Come on now. Looking like a Chia Pet Wolfman Bigfoot. Or as Eddie Murphy would say, Aguna Gugu, cuss. Jason Worth is Aguna Gugu. No, no, no. Seriously, seriously. He drives a car 145 miles per hour. He's Aguna Gugu. He'll be Aguna Gugu, no house, walking the dog. You know the rest. That's right, cuss. Aguna Gugu. She's a goonie goo. Probably one of the funniest comedy specials I've ever seen in my life. Eddie Murphy, delirious. Even to this day, it holds up. Nothing but dated 70s and 80s references, but it holds up. It is so funny. It is so funny. And I can't wait till my kids know how to curse because I'm going to put that's the first thing I play for them. The first thing I play for them is Eddie Murphy, delirious. But the pressure being playing in these smaller markets because that's all there is. Yeah, there might not be three newspapers, but around here there's enough newspapers to read three different articles about the same thing. But the pressure is on you. I mean, Pittsburgh, right? To play football in Pittsburgh, you don't think there's more pressure to play football in Pittsburgh than there is in New York? I do. I do because not only on the field, but off the field. They know where you are all the time. They know how much you tipped. They know much all of this kind of stuff, whether you're a good guy or a bad guy. They know you off the field in these smaller markets. I mean, there's no peace in the valley for any of these guys who play in a smaller thing. You see, New York, you can hide. That's the beauty of New York. Went to see Ant-Man the other day. Right, Paul Rudd. our kids were very impressed because my wife told them, we used to live in the Village, Greenwich Village, or actually the West Village, excuse me, on West 12th Street, right in Abingdon Square. Oh, boy, if I could go back, I would. But anyway, Paul Rudd used to ring the bell at our door. He knew somebody in the building all the time. Oliver Platt was in the building. You know, we used to bump into Sarah Jessica Parker walking around. Not that I don't have anything for her, but this was her Sex in the City day, so she was something special at that time. She had a hot show. But that's the thing about New York. People in New York, I don't know if you know who Peter Gallagher is. He was in Sex, Lies, and Videotape years and years ago, and he was also, I think he was, his acting tour de force was being the evil developer in Step It Up 3 or something like that. Step It Up 4, the Miami one. Take It to the Streets. Anyway, I'm coming off the subway at 72nd Street, bump right into him, coming off the corner, walking towards 69th, bump right into him. We both look at each other. He's like, hey, I'm sorry, man. I'm like, me too. I'm like, oh, Peter Gallagher. I didn't say that to him, but, you know, I recognized him. And that was it. I didn't ask for autographs. I didn't try to give him a script. Didn't try to do anything. People in New York, you talk about cool. I don't know about it now because the neighborhoods have changed, but people used to be cool because no one got fazed by anything. You know, of course there's going to be the one or two, ooh, Michael Strahan, you know, or you know, somebody like that. Jeter! But it's like, what am I going to say to Derek Jeter if I see him on the street? What's up, Derek? That's about it. Give him a head nod. Yo, what's up? I mean, I got nothing to talk to him about. He sure as hell don't want to talk to me. And that's why he's in New York. That's why people move to New York, so they can be left alone. Yeah, they know that they're getting noticed. They know that they're getting the double take and the second look, but no one's going up to him to bother him. Act like you've been there. And that's what happens in New York City, man. I mean, the third string player on the Giants or the Jets can run into the middle of Times Square and choke the Elmo guy. And no one would even know who he was until the Post exposed him. If that happens in Redskin land, forget about it. Got to be on the front page news. You know, it's just, hey, that's, I don't even know. I don't even know a guy. I just turn off the radio when I start hearing that. Well, they need depth on the right guard. Oh, please. 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 The Redskins need a new owner, and you know it, and I know it. And that field is an atrocity. FedEx Field. The two of the worst stadiums I've ever been in, one was FedEx, and the other, which is almost what FedEx is modeled after, is the Arthur Ashe Tennis Stadium in New York where they play the U.S. Open. That's right. I'm foo-foo-shee-shee. I go to the U.S. Open, watch the tennis. But you know what about the tennis? The best part about watching tennis out there? I was into it for a while. But going out to the outer courts where you can sit like it's a high school match and seeing how fast they hit it and how quick they get to the ball, that's the best part. So if you're ever, don't go to Arthur Ashe Stadium. Don't worry about who's playing on center court because you're going to be so high up anyway if you get general admission. They built it like a seven-story building, and then they built a fan out. That's where the stadium seating comes in, and it's all out. And that's what FedEx is like. It's like a valley. You know, you look straight down, and all of a sudden you're out. That's why no noise comes out of there. So what does Snyder do? They're going to leave FedEx as soon as they can. But Snyder wants to build a new stadium, who knows where, but that's just like RFK. I said I was in the Washington Monument the other day. I saw RFK. It's still standing. You know, it's like everybody wants something different until they screw up different. It's tiring. I'll tell you that. It's tiring. But I'll tell you what's not tiring. I want to touch upon Larry Hogan. Running through a tough stretch. Got the chemotherapy. His hair's gone. But he's bouncing around doing the best he can. You always, you know, you wish the best for him. Wish the best for anybody with cancer. Especially if you've had to live with anybody who's had it. But the governor, you know, got elected to be governor. He got elected to be chief executive officer of the state of Maryland. That's what the people elected him for. And he's going around doing things that he can do without or within his power, like closing the jail in Baltimore. The best part about him closing that jail, which was inhuman conditions, he said it was an embarrassment, et cetera, and so forth. I'm not going to lie to you, I haven't read up on this jail. I've only been down here a while, so I haven't heard of the corruption or whatever was going on in this men's jail. But before the Civil War jail was built, you got to close that down. It's inhumane. But anyway, he's out there saying, I'm closing this jail. And people, the outcry is like, oh, I'm happy he's closing it, but what is he doing about the rest of the jail? He's doing what he can as the chief executive officer of the state of Maryland. Everybody's like, well, Larry Hogan should have consulted with us first. Why is he going to consult with you first? He doesn't need to. Why would he? I mean, there is a chance to consult, because I had a friend, Reagan Richard. He was the president of my fraternity. And he said something that didn't make sense to me at the time, but then it did once I started thinking about it. I was a recording secretary, so I wrote it down. And then I started thinking about it, and he goes, we're going to take a chapter vote, and I'm going to decide. He's like, oh, Reagan, who do you think you are? But I got it. After a while, I got it. He was taking consensus. He wanted to see what the opinion would be, but he's going to make the decision anyway. He knew he was going to make the decision based on what his thoughts were, but he wanted to throw a finger in the air, see which way the wind was blowing. Because we're going to take a chapter vote, and I'm going to make a decision. It wasn't a democracy. It wasn't a republic. It wasn't anything. He was elected the leader of this particular thing, and it was something that was in the bylaws of what he could decide, and he did it. Larry Hogan doesn't have to do that. There are going to be things, you know, the bad part here is there are going to be things where he's going to need to build a consensus in the assembly, you know, in the House, state of the reps, the state House of Reps in Annapolis. He's going to need to do stuff like that. There's going to be things that he has to get through. But why does everybody feel like they have to be consulted? When were you elected governor? You weren't. Larry Hogan decided, you know, again, why does Larry Hogan get to make the decision? Because he did it. You want to be state rep the whole time? You be state rep. That's good. It's honorable. But it doesn't mean the governor has to consult with you on everything, especially on the low-hanging fruit of the things he can get done right away. He is the governor. Get used to it. And I'm going to have issues with him as well on certain things. I mean, it's not like I'm waving a flag for him. I'm waving a flag for the office. I understand what he's doing. I mean, look at Obama, right? Executive order. I don't need Congress. Executive order. That's how I'll get things done. But that's skirting the issues. That's not even things that are in his bailiwick, you know, things that he can handle, things that he doesn't need to build consensus on. Larry Hogan, man, you know, I've seen it before with Giuliani. We've talked about Giuliani before. You know, it's going to be a tough road to hoe when he does need to get people in his camp, when he does need to get people behind him. It'll be tough. But until then, let me do what I got to do. And what hasn't he done? This guy has kept a lot of his promises right now. I'm going to cut taxes. You know, he lowered the tolls on the ICC 20%. I mean, who ever thought that would happen? I would be for the guy saying, I'm not going to raise them. I'm going to leave them where they are. I'm not going to raise them in my term, my 4 years. But if you want to roll them back, you know, if we can afford it, what can I say? I don't think being a dictator is the way, but sometimes it's the only way. You know, there's a mayor, Mayor Noam Bramson. I believe he said the worst part of governing the people is the people. You know, these politicians at times think they know more than you do, but, you know, I mean, people wanted to be consulted. And then all of a sudden, they're taking a good thing that he's doing, and now they're saying, well, you know, he's not addressing the other issues. Because he can't address the other issues. He's doing what he can do. What's easy for him to slice off and do and be productive. And for it to be productive and for the people of Maryland. Everybody wants their two cents. Hey, he's the gov, man. He's the gov. This dovetails into my last conversation about Giuliani. Again, last night I was in the hockey locker room, and these guys were talking about it. It's young guys. It's some 35, 25. I mean, I'm 47 years old, so I've seen a little bit more than they have, especially when it comes to New York City. But some points were raised that I thought were very interesting. You know, waxing poetic on a city. It's like talking about New York City. It's like, oh, you remember the days of CBGBs and – you know, in Times Square when it was seedier and they had record shops and all this kind of stuff, you know, and now the gentrification's really taken away the culture. It's a tough argument. It's true. Gentrification has taken away culture in New York City. But if your culture is needles and bums and being afraid, then your culture, for the most part, is gone. It's on its way back with de Blasio. You know, when progressiveness leads to lack of order, you get what you vote for. But it was funny because there are millennials in New York City who don't know any different from what the city was when they first got there, when they first moved from Missouri or D.C. or Boston, when they first moved to New York. I was there before 1991, in 1990. I was there with David Dinkins. I just got to see what the city was when it was bare bones, when it was running, but not running well. You know, they talk about Times Square, where people, you know, Times Square is sterile now. Well, is it better to get your pocket picked all the time? Is it better to have people running up on you, begging for money? Is it better for people throwing a fistful of joints in your face? Yo, Chiba, yo. Is that better? Bryant Park, where they have movies now, where a public space behind the library on Fifth Avenue. You know, this place, when I was a kid, my mom and I used to go to the city. I did some child modeling, if you believe that. You know, Ricky Schroeder used to go to all these model shoots. Look at me as a name dropper. But we used to go, and we'd walk by, and there would be guys with handfuls of joints at the library and at Bryant Park trying to sell a joint to a 10-year-old, mind you, with his mother. I was like, yo, how much? No. I wasn't like that at all. I was going to trade him like 3 Johnny Bench cards and a Manny Sanguian to get a joint. That's not true. No, but I mean, New York City was a scary place. Now it's not a scary place, but a lot of things that made New York City cool are gone. A lot of bars, a lot of restaurants, things that, you know, that added the flavor, people can't afford anymore. So where is the trade-off here? It's like, it's not just gentrification, because we're talking about areas that were clean anyway. But now they're getting to be a different clean. The gentrification happens. I mean, let's call it, right? You're in a white neighborhood in New York City. You had a newsstand there and a coffee shop. This is was your life. You went to the newsstand, you went to the coffee shop, you had your cigarette, you sat there, you ate your hamburger, had another cup of coffee, read your post in the New York Times. That was your life. But gentrification in a different way, gentrification or scaliness, I guess, is a better word. I don't even know what to call the word, because do you gentrify a neighborhood that's gentrified already? No, it just means that the rents start getting raised, because Bank of America comes in and takes over your corner newsstand. Bank of America is there. There's no people in there. It's just an ATM machine on the corner. Prime real estate on the corner. So, all right, it's gone. I'll get my newspaper delivered. Whatever. I'll go a block away to get it. I'll go to this coffee shop, though. And then one day you walk to that coffee shop, you see a sign, thank you for 30 great years, New York City. Thank you, West 12th Street, for 30 great years. We will be closing our doors as of August 6th. Why? Because they can't afford the rents anymore. So who goes in there? A Stella McCartney handbag or designer shop. The rent. I mean, in New York City, I had a one-bedroom apartment on the West Village, 8th Avenue and West 12th Street, bordering West 4th Street. Anybody we liked, we used to tell we lived on the corner of 8th Avenue and West 12th Street. Anybody we didn't like, we used to tell them we lived on the corner of West 12th Street and West 4th Street. Well, how does that happen? Because West 4th Street takes that dip in that curve. But anyway, I guess 2005, 2003, 2002. We're spending $2,100 for a one-bedroom, second-floor walk-up. It was an easy walk-up, no big deal. The building was, they had an elevator, but we never... No, it wasn't in walk-up then, but they had an elevator, but we always took the steps. It was so easy. The best place I've ever lived. Loved it. My wife loved it. I mean, we had everything around there, but $2,100. That's not too far off my mortgage now. I mean, and that's the thing that's going to happen to New York is that New Yorkers are not going to be able to live there anymore. It's just not, you know, gentrification is just not about different neighborhoods building up. But what's happening is that Manhattan is getting so expensive. Park Slope is getting so expensive. Brooklyn Heights, the places that people wanted to live in originally, that the people who were from there or New Yorkers themselves who aren't in finance or who are not making them buku bucks can't live there anymore now either. So they move out. So the people, I mean, I was reading a book about the West Village, about the area that I lived in. You know, and Dylan, Bob Dylan was talking about it, or Peter, Paul, and Mary were talking about it. Because can you imagine coming to New York now to make your fortune, to build and to be? You'd need 17 roommates. He goes, back in 1960, 1965, all I needed, you know, I went to the West Village because all I needed was an apartment for $37 a month or something like that, $100 a month. I could make that playing guitar on the corner. You don't go to New York anymore to make your dreams. You go to New York established. You go to the cities now established. And what's happening? It's like places like I wouldn't even think about living in years and years ago, like Bushwick, Brooklyn, or Brownsville, home of Mike Tyson. You know, places that you read about and you say, oh, I got to stay out of there. I'm not going to. But guys are moving out there. And what's happening is that New York City is coming so much further out. People like Brooklyn, there's a lot of misnomers about a lot of things. It's like, I live in Brooklyn. I'm part of New York City. No, you're not. It depends where you are. If you're in Park Slope, maybe. If you're near the water, if you're near the East River, maybe. But the further you go out, you're in Sheepshead Bay. You are a 45-minute train ride, if not longer, from downtown Manhattan. You could say you're in New York City, but, I mean, it's the suburbs in the city. It's beautiful or not. Oh. If you like living on the water, it's really nice. I don't want to say it's beautiful, but it's nice out there. But don't tell me that you're part of New York City anymore. You know, you're inside the boundaries of New York City. I mean, that's the thing. When people talk about the city, they talk about Manhattan. Nobody can afford Manhattan anymore. So the people who used to be able to live there, you know, it's trickle-down economics, right? This is how trickle-down economics works. It's trickle-down effect of people getting pushed out. So people are now living in Brownsville. I had somebody once asked me about Yonkers, New York. I went to Yonkers, New York, which borders New Rochelle or is near New Rochelle. And it borders the Bronx and Mount Vernon, et cetera. Crazy place. I've seen more strange stuff happen in Yonkers, New York than anything else. I literally saw a guy pissing into the wind. He had his pants down around his ankles. He was walking forward. The wind was coming the other way, and he was taking a pee-pee straight into it. You talk about it. It made me laugh. There were guys on midget motorcycles riding around there. Guys still wearing Gazelles, which were stylish in 1983. It's 2010. Guy tells me, he goes, I want to buy an apartment building there. What do you think about it? I said, there's no way I'd live there. But then I started thinking about it. Well, it's close to New York City. And, of course, you know, people don't know any better anymore. They've been pushed out so far that, yeah, they'll live in this, you know, if you get off of the water, off of this little area in Yonkers, it's scary. But people will live there now because they're forced to. So you can wax poetic, crime, everything and this stuff, but you make a place so safe that there's nothing, that people can't afford it anymore. Again, I'm just asking more questions and giving answers, but that's something that we should delve into. That's where the studies of cities should be again. Based on what you've lost in your culture, like CBGBs, but, you know, stepping over dope fiends. Or, you know, gentrified to where the meatpacking district in the city is now, like, foo-foo shishi again. Western Beef, the supermarket there, gets knocked out and moved away for you know, a store that has one rack and four tables, and that's their inventory. But everything in there is about $1,000 and 15, you know, $1,000 and 15 cents. I don't know. Anyway, my name is Bruce Negrin. The program's called Outside Looking In. We're going to be here on Thursdays at 2. I think that's what we're going to do, 2 or 3. So we'll try to find out, and I'll let you know. If you want to get on the mailing list, just email me at bnegrinradio@yahoo.com or leave me a note on the Facebook page. It's called Outside Looking In with Bruce Negrin, and I'll get back to you. I really will, because I like you. I like you a lot. You can catch us in the archives on Blog Talk Radio, as always. So if you've missed any shows and you want to just hear me pontificate about everything and pretend like I know everything, you can do that as well. But do me a favor right now, okay? Step up to the mic because nobody's going to say it for you. And do something today that'll make you better tomorrow. I'll talk to you next week.